Formula One is back for 2024, and so is F1 Nation with me, Tom Clarkson. Every Monday throughout the season, we'll bring you expert analysis, insight, and reaction from the heart of the Formula One paddock. Whether you're joining us for the first time or you're a seasoned listener, welcome to the show and thank you very much for joining us. If you ever want to ask us a question, then you can email us at f1nation@f1.com. f1nation@f1.com. And we'll do our best to answer whatever queries you have on the podcast. We've got so much to talk about before this Saturday's Bahrain Grand Prix gets the 2024 season underway. We'll discuss what we've learnt from pre-season testing, as well as some of the key stories to keep an eye on in 2024. And we'll be putting our F1 Nation team to the test in Quiz the Nation. And that team is a stellar cast. I'm joined by 1996 Formula One world champion Damon Hill. Hello, Damon.
Hello, Tom. How are you? That was a great introduction.
And we have Sky presenter Natalie Pinkham. Pinkle, hello.
Morning, hello.
And of course, last but by no means least, it's former McLaren podium finisher and current Aston Martin ambassador, Pedro de la Rosa. Pedro, how are you?
Very well, very well. Here in Bahrain already, you know, warming up for what's coming.
Well, you're so keen. I feel like we've got the band back together. It's great to see you all.
It's good to be back, isn't it? It's great. It's great. We're getting going. I mean, I spent the last God knows how many months in total darkness and pouring rain, it seems like, except for a small hiatus when I popped out to do some skiing with the man who works in F1 and his son. That was interesting, wasn't it, Tom?
We had a good time, Damon. That is true.
Cheers for the invite, boys.
It was very lastminute.com, I'll tell you that.
It was very last minute. Look, let's get down to business. We've had 3 days of testing in Bahrain. The drivers have done long runs, short runs, practice starts, pit stop, you name it, they've done it. And they've gathered a lot of data, which the teams will be analysing right now as we speak in the build-up to this weekend's opening race. What we've seen, listened to and read from testing doesn't give anywhere near a full picture of what we might witness this weekend or for the rest of the season. But Pedro, as you've just said, you're already in Bahrain with Aston Martin. You were there for testing. What have been the main talking points from your point of view?
Wow, what a question to start with the podcast, Tom. There's been so many things going on. I mean, everyone was talking about the design of the cars, the side pods, the look-alike of each car, but the biggest talking point was obviously the Red Bull. Not only because it was a different concept, but also because the first day of testing, Max was flying like, for a long time, I haven't seen someone opening such a big gap to the rest, you know, in the first few laps of the first, you know. So I think that after that, they must have probably, you know, start adding fuel to the car just to make sure that they didn't go as fast as it looked like. But that was the biggest talking point, how fast the Red Bull and how different it was.
Well, I want to ask Pedro a question, because this time last year, Aston Martin were obviously straight out of the blocks. Really exciting start to the season. Obviously got a podium in Bahrain. And I'm hearing that Fernando feels even better this time round. So is that the case? I mean, can we be genuinely really excited as Aston Martin big pushing Red Bull all the way?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure really, you know. I mean, we had a great last day, the long run from Fernando at the end of the day. We were always giving priority to the long runs, and especially at the time that it matters, which was at night time, which is from 6 p.m. onwards, which is the time that the race will happen, the qualifying will happen. So it was an encouraging long run, to be honest. But there's so many things, Nats, to be careful about. Is what time of the day you did the long run, how windy it was. But also people are comparing long runs and they are making mistakes because they are comparing the long runs. For example, it is very different to do a long run with heavy fuel to do a race simulation. They're different things. A race simulation, you start with 110 kilos, let's say, which is the kilos you would start a race with. And you degrade the fuel as you run. So you do pit stops, you change compounds, and you basically do the 57 laps, of the race, you end up with 0 kilos of fuel at the end of the stint. Then if you do long runs, every time you change tires, you fill the tank again. So it is a bit different. I mean, that's why it makes it so difficult to compare lap times, because you have to degrade the fuel, degrade the time, you know, basically. So it is not as simple as that. Plus then you have to be very careful with track temperature and wind. So it is difficult, though. Basically, I cannot answer your question. I think that the teams, you can compare yourself against the past, but it's very difficult to compare yourself against your competitors.
So compare yourself to this time last year. Are you better?
Of course. I mean, this is Formula One, you know. I mean, every year you improve. Every year you add downforce, you lower the weight, you basically work on the suspensions, on the mechanical side. So I think there's no team in the grid that is not faster than last year. I mean, this would be ridiculous. I mean, this is that's why when people ask me, I mean, how do you compare against the rest, or how are you doing? I just tell them the truth is I have no idea, because there's around 6-7 seconds on fuel effect, those 110 kilos versus, in qualifying, typically in Bahrain, you would be using 5 kilos. Every 10 kilos is over 3/10 of a second difference. So just imagine the difference. And then there is the compound, which was people were doing their lap times sometimes with the C4, C5, which is extremely soft, and you would never use it in Bahrain. You would go to the C3. And then there is the engine modes on top of that, because we have the engine mode. So where do you use the energy? How much you use? How much you exploit the engine? So it can be another half a second on top of that. Do you use DRS or not? Because the long runs, you don't use DRS. So what time of the day? The morning, the midday, it was over 1 second slower than in the afternoon at nighttime. So it is very complicated to read the times. You have to be very careful. And therefore, that's why I think the teams have to compare to themselves. Some teams did race simulations with 100, 110, 100 whatever kilos to start with, and they ended up with virtually nothing. But other teams just did consistent long runs. So they came into the garage, they filled the tanks, and went out again with a new set of tires. Why do some teams do race simulations? Why some other teams do this? They don't do it to hide performance, because the people think that everyone is hiding performance. It's not because of that. You are doing your homework. And sometimes it's better to do a race simulation. Sometimes it's better to come into the garage, put the fuel back in and go out, because then you can compare the performance of the compounds you will be using during the race. You know, so there is a lot of explanations, but the reality is that with 3 days of pre-season testing, people are not playing to hide their performance. They're just trying to learn.
I was at testing as well, Pink, and I like Pedro, came away feeling that Red Bull have taken a massive jump, and I did happen to be in the Red Bull hospitality area just as Adrian Newey walked past, and I said to him, "Oh, Adrian, new car looks good." And he said, "It's going to look very different after race 7. We've got a big upgrade coming," which is race 7 being the first European race at Imola. And all I could say was, please delay the upgrade.
Yeah, we can intercept it so it doesn't arrive. You could watch it live as it happened all 3 days from dawn till dusk on Sky, thanks to F1 as well. But there was a great bit where Max had done a run, and then Adrian is talking to Jean-Pierre Lambiesi. So, and he's on the pit wall, and he's sort of they're kind of having a quiet chat, but laughing like drains, you know, because they obviously realise how quick their car is. And I think they probably after that decided we need to disguise this a bit, because I don't think this is going to go down too well.
Damon, that's a really good point. Pedro says no one's hiding performance, but I definitely sensed that qualifying simulations went out the window after that. If they were planning on any, they didn't need to do that. The car is so impressive to watch. I went out to turn 11 on Friday evening and just watched for half an hour. And Max was doing a sort of, not a race simulation, but he was simulating the first stint of a race. And that thing was like a metronome, every lap doing exactly what he wanted. And I came away thinking, well, yeah, the rumours are true, that thing is a step ahead. I think it's very close behind Ferrari, maybe in P2, but it is close. And I think we will see some of the second and third order performance differentiators becoming a factor this year. Things like, I think, you know, strategy is always important, but as the field converges, you're going to be relying on strategy, on pit stops, on where that center of gravity is that we mentioned earlier. So you're going to, you know, the best racing teams are going to do well this year, not just the fastest cars. I definitely felt that Checo Perez was struggling a little more than Max Verstappen in that car. They had to rejig their program, as all the teams did, because of the drain cover issue at turn 11 that happened twice. So Checo Perez thought he was only going to get half a day on day two, but ended up doing the whole day and didn't look as comfortable in the car. But we've seen that before at Red Bull. And I think that is the biggest question mark as we go into the season is what happened. How is Perez going to get on? I think the job description is clear. It is to raise the bar in qualifying and, you know, bring home more points than he did last year. Yet he's going to be looking in his mirrors at Daniel Ricciardo, at Liam Lawson, maybe at Fernando Alonso will be trying to muscle in on that second Red Bull as well.
For me, it's about Perez having more consistency through the season. Because you remember, he obviously started last year well and finished it well. That middle bit that was so troublesome for him. So it's about having the mindset where he can be consistent, not rattled by Max's performance. I mean, it must be so hard being Max's teammate. But if you can focus on your own game, then maybe that's the key. I mean, I'm probably oversimplifying it. But to get distracted, you tell me, Damon and Pedro, how difficult is it to remain focused on your own cause and not be distracted by the other side of the garage?
It's not a problem I ever had, Natalie. I'm joking, of course. I mean, actually, of course, we're always looking over our shoulder, aren't we, Pedro? You know, it's a kind of like a seesaw, you know, in the garage. The team are looking to be the quickest. And so the driver that is quickest, they all gravitate towards. And so you need to then go quicker again. And then it kind of tips backwards and forwards. And the trouble is, if it stays in the other guy's favour for too long, then interest tends to kind of wait. I mean, they do their very best, obviously, to give equal attention to both drivers. And actually, it's, you know, they're pretty disciplined about that. But nevertheless, it's a natural thing for the designer, for the design team, for the engineers and the team owners and people to be more interested in the guy that's quickest.
Nat, it is terrible when you have a monster next to you in the garage. It is just terrible. And I remember in 2007 when we had this endless pre-season testing, we went to Malaysia, we went to Bahrain, and I was at McLaren, and I had as my teammates, but obviously the race drivers were Fernando and Luis. And we were going to Bahrain, for example, which is a circuit I know well, and I was always pretty quick there. We were doing the pre-season testing, and the plan was basically for Fernando and Luis to do all days. But those days that they were tired, that there were long runs to do, or they, you know, there was nothing really that they wanted, they were feeling interested about, I would jump in to unload their work. And I remember jumping, and I was very fortunate to be jumping into the McLaren one day in a morning against alongside Lewis Hamilton, the next afternoon against Fernando, for example. You know, so I was measuring myself against these two monsters, and they were so quick in any condition that if you start comparing yourself against them, you end up underperforming. So you just have to concentrate on what you can do, like you've done all your life, and forget about what's next in the garage. Because if you do that, and that's what, you know, it would be my advice to Checo, is just forget about how quick Max is and he can be. Just do your work and do it to the maximum. But it is very, very easy to say. It's extremely difficult to do because we are born to beat our teammates. They earn your living, you know. I mean, it doesn't matter if you win or you lose. You just have to be always faster than your teammate. So it's very difficult psychologically.
Checo is there as Max's wingman, isn't he? Really. That, so Red Bull wants Checo to be competitive enough that he can stop the other guys from threatening Max if it ever came to it, and also help them in winning the Constructors' Championship. Because don't forget, last year was the first time they'd ever done it, you know, getting the 1-2 in the Championship as well. So, you know, he'd... not the Constructors' Championship, they won that a few times. But, I mean, that is Checo's job, is to be good enough to make sure they go 1-2 on the podium as many times as possible.
I feel like I'm missing out, because it seems everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss lately. And you know what they're hearing a lot of? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling handcrafted furniture or homemade skincare, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person, leaving you to focus on everything else without needing to learn any new skills in design or coding, and it's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. That's because it's got all your channels covered. From a shopfront-ready POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform. It even gets you selling across social media marketplaces like Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And what I love about Shopify is that it gives you complete control over your business and your brand, quietly supporting you every step of the way with its award-winning help and extensive business course library. And no matter what your goals are, you'll find it's full of industry-leading tools designed to ignite your growth and give you the confidence to take your business to the next level. It's incredibly empowering for entrepreneurs. And it's time to get serious about selling and get Shopify today. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/nation, all lowercase. Go to shopify.co.uk/nation to take your business to the next level today. shopify.co.uk/nation. It's worth mentioning, I think, that Formula One is fueled by paranoia. Doesn't matter what area of the business you work in, whether you're a designer, you're paranoid about what the other teams are doing. If you're a racing driver, you're paranoid about what your teammates doing. I think if you're a team principal, you're paranoid about what money's being spent elsewhere and what other...
So who's been telling you this, Tom?
Yes.
Funnily enough,
he's paranoid. I spent
an hour on Friday.
Yes. Come on, own up. Who is it?
Who's going to take your job? Oh, who's going to take your job, Tom?
I spent an hour discussing this kind of stuff with Checo Perez for this week's season opening F1 Beyond the Grid, actually. So that's out on Wednesday. But
oh, Tom, poor guy. So you basically talked to him about paranoia going into the start of the season.
We didn't only talk about that, but I just think I can't think of another sport that has this undercurrent of...
Oh, I don't know. I think it's every sport. I think that's what it is to succeed, isn't it? You're always going to be kept on your toes and pushing forward.
I mean, we're talking about paranoia, but it's just pressure. It's pressure of the, you know, top sport. And there's another added pressure that the racing driver has to face every day. And it's the fact, not only about your teammate, about the other competitors, it's the fact that you represent 750 to 800 families, you know. And this is something that I always, for me, it was always quite tough. Because it's, if you do well or you do bad, you're just reassuring or you're just putting in jeopardy their jobs, in a way. And that is something that you never have to forget as a sportsman, you know. But you know the ones that succeed who are? I mean, and Damon knows well, because he's the only world champion here in this chat, you know, in this podcast, is the fact that the ones that take they enjoy that pressure. If you don't enjoy that type of pressure, if you have any, if you lack self-confidence, whatever, you will end up wanting to quit sooner or later, because there will be always a monster next alongside you in the garage at one point.
We need to do a special episode just on confidence, I think, at some point. Petra, because a lot of what we talk about on when we're doing our stuff at Sky is the mood of the driver. And Tom, you do all the interviews. You know, that's why we do the interviews. We want to know what state of mind the driver is in, because we know Fernando is like, he's rock solid, he's totally confident. And this, is it an indicator? What comes first? Is it the confidence, or is it the ability, and then the confidence comes after? I mean, it's a really it's a chicken and egg thing, I think. And some drivers show a little bit of, and I was guilty of this when I was racing. Guilty of showing a little bit of uncertainty, and then suddenly everybody piles in because you're not giving out that thing. And Natalie's nodding her head because she spends her life looking and analysing drivers and confidence and state of play in that in the psychological department, don't you? In a way.
For me, you've hit the nail on the head there, Damon. It's about what you exude. There's that quote from Eleanor Roosevelt that says, "No one can make you feel inferior without your consent."
Yeah, it's a brilliant quote, yeah.
And it's so true about life. And I just think that that's what... I mean, look, we know Sergio Perez is a great driver. We know he's got a phenomenal car. So what's the one piece missing?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's the chicken and egg, isn't it? It's like if you know what he was like when he was winning at the start of last year, his confidence was up. You know, the problem is the evidence is the lap time and the confidence. It's very difficult to be confident if the evidence is saying you're not as quick as the other guy.
Yeah, but hang on a second. We need to go back one step because he did start so well.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
They changed the car.
They changed the car towards to suit Maxwell. I mean, look, I think we're looking back now rather than looking forward. And I think we need to focus on if I was Juarez's born as a psychologist, I would just be drawing a line under last season and moving forward. I mean, this is his big hope, isn't it, 2024? Does he go into the season genuinely wanting and thinking he can challenge for a championship? Or does he go in with a change of mindset that he accepts he's the number two?
Yeah, that was his mistake, though, wasn't it?
I mean, one take it as an example, Eddie Irvine, okay? Which he was my teammate at Jaguar, and there was one thing I learned from him that it was really interesting. Basically, he was never telling me that, you know, that. But when you think you cannot beat your teammate because he's better, and he had Michael Schumacher next to him, his attitude was, "Well, I'm the second best driver in the world," you know, and he nearly won a world championship. Just having that attitude and feeling comfortable with that second best driver in the world. Did he ever believe he was the second driver? I believe so. And I think the trick is if you cannot beat your teammate because he's so fast or he's one of the greatest of all time, like Max is, definitely, then just be comfortable with being the second best because you will have a chance to beat him at one point if you perform to your best. And this is the key.
Okay, so what are our thoughts on Mercedes? Still clearly building an understanding of their car. When we talk about the start of last year, we had this sort of fairly grand launch of the car, a lot of expectation. I feel like they're playing things right down. I mean, like to a point earlier, Pedro, about look, 3 days of testing. It's not a case of showing your hand or not. You're just getting on with your homework. I still feel like Mercedes are playing their cards certainly very close to their chest. That was fine.
Yeah, they are a very difficult team to read. You know, if you look at their short runs, they were quick, but they were possibly, they looked very, very heavy on fuel. I was watching at the corners. They had a lot of lockups. It looked like the car was difficult to stop. And so, but then the long runs, especially the long run that Luis did on day two was extremely good. So we have to think that Mercedes will be very competitive, and they will be more competitive than what it looked like from their lap times here in this pre-season test in Bahrain. I think that Luis was very fast on the long run, and that's something that has been highlighted by many teams.
For me, Tom, the really big story this year is how George Russell responds. And I'm already feeling he's grown in stature. And he's tweaking like a team leader because he knows that this is a big transition year. If he can prove himself in that role and Kimi Antonelli can prove himself in F2, then it would feel like that is a natural partnership for the team going forward. I mean, I've no doubt George Russell is ready to lead this team, but he's going to have to put in some really strong results and really iron out any of his little mistakes from last year. I'm thinking of Singapore, for example.
I think the team dynamic at Mercedes is going to be fascinating to observe this year because, as you say, there's that transition period for George in which he's got to step up and become the team leader. Then there's the sort of no man's land that Lewis is going to drift towards as the season goes on, as the team starts to exclude him from meetings about the future and...
Presumably that will be straight away. I mean, I just don't understand how you operate like that.
Well, yeah, and I think it will be very difficult for Lewis when you consider that, you know, he said that he's been with Mercedes for 26 years. They've supported him since karting. And then suddenly the team that has given him all that support is going to be giving him the cold shoulder. So I think that is going to become a story, because I don't think that can be, I don't think that's going to be a smooth transition for him. I thought it was interesting at the test that when he came into the press conference, all the questions were about him and Ferrari, not him and Mercedes already. And yet we're at, you know, the point in the season where everyone's on the honeymoon. We're all thinking we can all win the world championship, but actually it's all about Ferrari for him. So in a way that will help George as he steps up, because Lewis is going to be sidelined.
Tom, that was a brilliant moment, because he realized he was talking about Ferrari, because you'd asking the questions about Ferrari. And then he suddenly realized, wait a minute, I can't go on about Ferrari because I'm still driving for Mercedes. And he had to kind of stop himself. And he rather skillfully stopped going on about Ferrari and said, well, wait a minute, I'm actually still a Mercedes driver. And that was a really telling moment, I thought.
But it's because we have, I mean, there was nothing really to say apart from talking about his future with Ferrari. Everything, all the Ferrari talk will happen now. But then once the season starts and you have the results, the weekend, the Grand Prix, I think that the people will divert the attention. So I think it's, if you're going to change team, it's better to say it before the season starts than during the season, especially if you have a hidden agenda. If you know that you're going to change, the team knows that you're leaving, it's better to make it public, get all these questions now, and then once the season starts. But I can see that Tom is not agreeing with me, so...
Well, I just feel that there was a lot to ask him about Mercedes, because it was at the test last year that the team came out and said, no, we've got it wrong again. They knew immediately last year that the car was wrong. And so I wanted to know, well, did you know immediately that you've got it right? And it was George Russell, back to him, who came out and said, yes, we've got rid of some of the diva characteristics that were there in last year's car. We know that already. So not Lewis Hamilton commenting on it, but... So anyway, that's going to be very interesting. Can they win races? I mean, let's not forget that last year was their first winless season since 2011. I think they'll win races, yeah. But I think...
But you think they're going to win races this year?
Mercedes, yes, I do, yeah. I think it's going to be so close. I think it's going to be so close that Red Bull will be favourites going into each event. Maybe Singapore aside. But I think people will trip up, and I think those second, third order differentiators that I talked about earlier will be a factor. And I think, you know, Mercedes have talked about improving their pit stops, improving exactly what I'm talking about. So they will become more of a factor, yeah.
If they don't do as well as they did last year, can we start talking about the decline of Red Bull? Was that a little bit too harsh?
I think that there's one thing that is very important, and we shouldn't forget. It's a 24-race season. So there will be many opportunities for many teams. You just have to keep on the hand, and that you have to keep developing your car, because there will be opportunities all round, and not only for Red Bull.
Let's move on to the Prancing Horse then. The only team... other than Red Bull, to win a race last year. That brilliant drive by Carlos Sainz in Singapore. I felt they looked pretty good last week. Pedro, you were there. Let's go to you first. Do you agree? Do you think they've taken a step forward?
They looked impressive. Not only on the timesheets, they were fast, you know, but you can argue that their lap time was done with the C4. I think that the most impressive thing of Ferrari was especially their long run pace, and also how easy the car looked through the corners. On those turn 11, turn 10, the difficult corners in Bahrain, the car looked easy, consistent. I couldn't see any mistakes from the drivers, which means that the car is easier. I could see many mistakes from many or plenty or most of the other drivers in these windy conditions in Bahrain, but not the Ferrari. So they looked impressive, yes. So... They will be a tough opposition for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the crucial point, isn't it? That the drivers seem happier, and it's the ironing out of those drivability issues, making it more predictable, easier to drive. I mean, I know Fred Vasseur was, they all try to manage expectations, but I don't know, I just think you sense that he's happier with things than he was a year ago.
The good cars are the cars that are good under the windy conditions. You know, because they are very, they are not sensitive to the through corner balance. They are really, they are really stable through the corners. Cars that are good on windy conditions means they will be good in most type of corners. And the Ferrari looks stable in Bahrain in these conditions.
Well, that's what I was thinking, listening when you were talking about watching the car in the windy conditions. That you know, that is a really good sign, because what it means is when the steering wheel, when the front wheels start to turn, it can upset the airflow under the car. And if you've got a crosswind, it's the similar thing. So you know, if the car is able to cope with that, and they've given the drivers a car that they can stay on top of when they've got a change in flow, airflow over the car or under the car, then that's a really good sign. It means they've sealed off the bottom of the car from influences, from crosswinds and stuff like that.
I felt both drivers oozed confidence at the test. You know, Charles Leclerc, when his confidence is up, he can be absolute dynamite. And I think we're going to see more of the 2019 spec Leclerc this year, when he came in and he had nothing to lose. He'd just come to Ferrari first year. And he was so impressive. And I think that's what we're going to see again this year. For Sainz, however, it is a difficult season, isn't it? He knows that he's out at the end of the year, whatever job he does for them this year. We talked about the team dynamics at Mercedes. And I mean, for Carlos, guys, you've been there. You know, what is the mindset for a driver going into his final year with a team?
Well, I think that, yeah, okay, it's much better when you have a long-term contract. But even if you have a long-term contract, that doesn't really mean much in Formula One either, you know? I mean, I've been with long-term contracts, and then suddenly at the end of the year, we've parted company. So all I'm saying is that I think that from the outside, it looks like it's going to be difficult. But I think that for any driver, we have a very short-term memory and a short-term perspective of things. You just are as good as your last few races, and that's the attitude of any racing driver. It's difficult to work on a team. You are not going to be the next year. I don't think so. You know, I really don't think so. Is it easier to look long term? Yes, but sometimes easier doesn't mean faster. Doesn't mean that you are more hungry. So I always believe in short-term contracts for drivers, because then you just give it 100% every day you jump into the car.
And it's not as if he hasn't got a long-term future in Formula
Absolutely.
One. You know, there are a lot of teams who want Carlos Sainz. I mean, and I would say Audi is top of the list in terms of the people who really want him. So he can take his time, focus on the day job, and what will be.
There's a lot of goodwill for Carlos, I think, you know, especially probably still in Ferrari as well, because he's done a very, very good job there. And I think he's one of these drivers who grows, you know, he's still growing and getting better.
I think that also, yeah, he feels really comfortable with this new Ferrari. The fact that what we were discussing, that it's more consistent through the corner, it's less random or peaky with under windy conditions. I think that you can tell he was the fastest guy, you know, over the 3 days of testing. And if you look at his lap times, they were done with the C4. Yes, it was the softer tire, but so his teammate Charles did it, and they did it on different days, but at very similar times. I mean, it was around 4:40, 4:45 p.m., which means they were following similar programs. So he was quick, definitely quick, genuinely quick.
Well, if Red Bull, Mercedes and Ferrari have all taken a step forward for this year, and I think we all agree on that, when we talk about McLaren, I would argue that that's the first team that we've talked about where they've stalled a bit. Yes, they've made progress because everyone's made progress, but relative to where they were at the end of last year, McLaren haven't had an easy time of it so far. Would you guys agree?
I'm surprised to hear you say that, Tom. I thought they did a decent job, or looked reasonably confident with their car, and their car looked like it was a continuation from last year's progress that they'd made. So they've got a good foundation, a good jumping off point to whatever the expression is. You know, they can press on from there. Yeah, I mean, we, you know, they're going to bring upgrades, aren't they? Yeah.
I'm with Damon on this because I think when you compare it to this time last year, do you remember the doom and gloom and where they was, you know, right off track and they were basically telling us, look, batten down the hatches, it's going to be a storm. And then obviously things came good in Austria. And I feel like the trajectory has been positive really since then. I don't know. I think McLaren will just be quietly confident coming into 2024.
But the drivers were saying at the test that we have had a few reliability issues here, particularly Lando, and that they are relying on the development rate being good enough to haul them back to the front. Let's not forget that Lando Norris was only outscored by Max Verstappen in the second half of last year. And I think the car he's got underneath him now will not allow him to be that competitive immediately. I'm not saying they can't get there, but when we get things underway in Bahrain this weekend, I don't expect McLaren to be quite as competitive as they were 3 months ago in Abu Dhabi.
It didn't look like an easy car to drive out there. You know, I was watching through the corners and it was definitely, you could tell that the drivers were fighting and that, especially I was watching Oscar on his short runs on day three, and he was trying to put a lap time together and he kept going off in turn 11 on the exit. So the car was definitely not easy to drive. They were fast, yes, but they were having to fight it a bit more.
No, that was a bit worrying.
Well, they were still very quick, Damon. They were still very quick, you know. I mean, I'm just judging by not the lap times, as I've said before, just mainly about what I saw at the track, which is, you know, it's just only an indication.
Well, you are. We're relying an awful lot on you, Pedro, for feedback, because you are the man on the track for the whole 3 days. You poor bloke. You must have got sunburn.
Yes, I'm Spanish, man. Don't worry. It's nothing for me.
I forget.
I think that intra-team battle between Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri is going to be a fascinating one as well. You know, Oscar coming into his second season, he's been there, he's done it. There are going to be no new surprises. And I think particularly in the races, he's going to get even more competitive. Lando needs no introduction. He's a great Formula One driver, but we did see him make a few mistakes last year under pressure from Oscar. So I'm fascinated to see how that evolves. And I really hope that the McLaren is fast enough for Lando in particular, actually, to get that first Grand Prix win. But they just need a few things to fall into place for that to happen. And of course, he's now got a long-term contract with McLaren as well. So he believes in the team, otherwise he wouldn't have signed it. Do you think he's a little bit disappointed that he jumped as quickly as he did on the new contract when you've got seats at Mercedes, at Aston Martin, etc. available?
I'm with Pedro on this. I think that the fluidity in the market for drivers, it needs to be kept fluid. And I think maybe we should think about not allowing long-term contracts. So everyone's contract becomes up for renewal at the end of the year. That'd be a lot of talking. That'd be a great talking point. And I think it's only because I'm very bitter because I never had, I only once had a long-term contract, and that was only for 2 years. And that was the second year of that one was so awful and I retired from racing anyway. So every Christmas I was spending anxiously wondering whether I was going to have a job the next year. And I think it does keep you on your toes.
Well, 13 drivers are out of contract at the end of this year. 13 drivers. So the silly season is going to go mad.
Right, gentlemen, any other business? And I don't want to kickstart this session by talking about what we do or don't call V-Carb, RB, Racing Bulls. But that team, the team called Daniel Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda, how competitive are they going to be?
They look promising. They look promising and fast, you know. But it's going to be very difficult. I really don't have a clear indication. The car looked pretty good And when I was watching the long run from Daniel, and they look consistent. But it's a team that it's difficult to read.
Let's talk Alpine and Williams. Pretty difficult 3 days for both of them. I feel, let's start with Alpine. They're obviously got high expectations, high hopes, but it feels like they're constantly stalling on those. I mean, where do they go from here? What do they look like out on track to you?
They look difficult. I mean, they look like they looked quite sensitive to the wind. It is true they never used the softest compound, so there is room for improvement there just alone by using the C4 or C5, which other teams did. But we don't really know if that will be the race spec, or they're waiting for, you know, some latest parts for the race. It didn't look easy for the drivers, that's for sure, out track.
I thought that Williams looked, well, it sounded like they were happier with things. I think that, you know, teams like Williams, we're talking about Alpine a moment ago, they've had a big injection of cash last year, but I mean, this takes time for these things to have an effect. They basically sold some interest, and so they've got a big windfall that they can spend. But you can't just suddenly improve your design facilities overnight. So, and I think it's a similar thing with Williams, is that they know where they want to go, and I think under James Vowles he will be going through in fine detail what can be improved. But I mean, you're not going to get that over Christmas. So the car is better, and I think the drivers were happier. And they will have an improvement. So, and they didn't do too badly last year. So, for what they expected to do. So, it's going to be the general feeling is it's going to be nip and tuck between a group of four cars or something, four teams at the back of the grid, which is Alpine, Williams, and Haas, and maybe RB. I don't know, but there's the next gap of the middle pack with the McLarens and the Aston Martins and so forth, and of course, and then there's the top potential runners, which are Ferrari and Red Bull. I think that's, and Mercedes perhaps, you know. So I think that's the way it's sort of broken down. So they could be anywhere in the mix there. They might even knock on the door of getting through to Q3 on occasions. I don't know.
Yeah, Williams, they did very, it was the team that did less laps during the whole 3 days, 299. So their first day was very bad. They had only 61 laps. So I think that their lap times and were masked a bit by the reliability issues they had. So I think there's more to come from Williams, to be honest.
Sauber are very ambitious this year. James Key, their new technical director, came in on the 1st of September, and he immediately added, I think, 50% to what he wanted for the targets for the aero guys, and they met those targets. So, yeah, they've had a good winter. I think they had a good test. Bottas was very upbeat in particular. So where are they going to slot in? I would say maybe next weekend, 6th, 7th, best team, something like that. Just outside Q3, but who knows? And that is the brilliant thing about this time of the year. But hold your thoughts on Bahrain next weekend, gang, because new feature for these preview shows in 2024 is our Quiz the Nation. Every race preview, we're going to test our experts' knowledge with a quiz on that week's race. So, Damon, Natalie and Pedro, how much do you guys know about the Bahrain Grand Prix? We're about to find out. We've got four rounds, qualifying, sprint, race and the podium. And if the scores are even after those, then we'll take you to a tiebreaker so we can crown a champion. So let's get on with the first round. It's qualifying, and you're each going to face one quickfire question worth 1 point. Right, Pedro, we're going to start with you. Question one. Who took the fastest lap at last year's Bahrain Grand Prix?
Verstappen.
That would have been too obvious, surely. Incorrect. So Pedro is incorrect. Yeah. I'm putting a zero.
I think I know this.
Go on.
I think I know it.
Go on. Go on.
Am I allowed to jump in?
Yeah, well, yes.
It's really obscure, and I might be way off the mark here, but I have this weird memory that it was Joe.
Yes, it was Pinkel.
Was it?
Zhou Guanyu. 1 minute 33.996, if anyone is interested. So, Pedro, not a great start for you.
I thought you asked who was going to do the fastest lap this season.
Okay.
Sorry.
Right. <Anyway. laughs> Pinks.
I can't believe how much I'm buzzing just for getting that one question right.
You love a quiz, don't you, Pinks? You love a quiz. Right, Pinks, your turn. Your turn. Which driver stepped in as a replacement for Juan Pablo Montoya, who was apparently injured playing tennis at the 2005 Bahrain Grand Prix?
I tell you what,
tick tack.
Oh, I see what you're doing here. You're trying to distract me because you know the answer.
I think I know it.
The answer be someone sitting in this room by any chance? Do you know what I was going to say? This is a lesson to all of those paddle tennis players out there. I mean, it looks great, but you've got to be careful. It wasn't you, was it, Pedro?
You're right. 1 point for Natalie.
That's not fair. He gave her help.
Hang on a minute. I think he did give me help. He was trying. See, that was bad from you, Pedro.
Yes.
You were trying to throw me with your little ticking clock. And actually, all that did is tell me you were very excited to say it was you. It was you. I love it.
I'm here to help, Natalie.
Pedro, you've made it when you're an answer on the Quiz the Nation quiz. Right, Damon, on to you. The 2014 Bahrain Grand Prix became known as the Jewel in the Desert because of an extraordinary battle between which two drivers?
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to really... 2014.
You were there.
Can I answer this one, man?
Yeah, Pedro, I mean, can answer
no,
this
one. No, you can't. Damon.
I can.
De La Rosa, wait.
Oh, God.
Damon's looking pensive.
It was... I know. No, it can't.
You were at the race.
I know I was, but I can't remember these races.
Damon, focus.
Yeah.
Do you remember our branding on Sky Sports that year? It was all Jewel in the Desert, Jewel in the Desert, Jewel in the Desert. Think about who would have been between you.
Tom, stop it, man. She's helping him.
Yeah, she is,
him.
Actually. Yeah. Yeah, they're ganging up on you, well, Pedro.
Was it... I don't know. 2014. That's 10 years ago, man. Honestly.
Easy question. You just have to sing the year.
It's like wading through treacle.
No, go on. I give up.
I mean...
I give up. It's going to be one of the drivers.
Two drivers. It's got to be two drivers. The question is...
Oh, is it Fernando Alonso and Lewis?
No, incorrect. Right. So, Pedro, you're dying to answer this, I can see. Who was it, Pedro?
Okay. Well, it was the fight between Lewis and Nico, you know?
Correct.
Last 10 laps after the safety car.
Yes.
Lewis was with the hard tire. Nico was with the medium.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
And then they were one second apart.
And, but it
1 second apart at the flag.
And the thing is, Damon, it was an easy one because it was the first year of the hybrid era. And the first year of the hybrid era, it was a clear dominance from the Mercedes engines. No?
Yeah. So, I remember. I was just teasing with you.
Anyway, I didn't get it right, the one from the fastest lap. So, you know,
all right.
Nothing to be proud of.
Team, after qualifying, the scores on the doors. Natalie has 1 point. Pedro has zero. And Damon has zero. So we're going into the sprint now. This game is sudden death. I want you to name the 18 drivers who have finished on the podium at the Bahrain Grand Prix since its debut on the Formula One calendar back in 2004. Each of you is going to take it in turns to name a driver. And if you have an incorrect answer, or if you repeat one that's already been given, or you just fail to provide one, then you're going to be out of the round. And the last person standing wins a point. All right? So all 18 drivers that have finished on the podium in Bahrain. Damon, we'll start with you. Off you go.
No, it's no good. I'm refusing to play because I don't like playing games which I know I'm going to lose at. So this is totally unfair. I mean, obviously Lewis, right? Obviously Max.
Okay, I only want one. Obviously. No, wait. I just need you. One. So
I've got one.
Right, you said one. Lewis. Pedro, now you.
Fernando.
Correct. Nats.
Sebastian Vettel.
Correct. Damon, back to you.
George Russell.
You're our first faller, Damon.
Yeah.
Damon is our first.
No, because
he hasn't finished on the podium.
Well, so I've learned something.
Damon is out. I have to say, Damon, I thought you'd last longer than that. But right, Pedro, back to you. Come on, 18 drivers that have finished on the podium in Bahrain. Give us one.
Okay, Bottas.
Correct. Nats.
You said Nico Rosberg.
Correct. Pedro, back to you.
Webermeit.
It's not meant to be this hard.
Webermeit.
Webermeit. Webermeit actually means that we have a winner because Marcus never finished on the podium in Bahrain. So Natalie gets our point. She is now, it is now 2 to Natalie, 0 to Pedro, and 0 to Damon. For those of you at home who want to know who the other podium finishers have been, Michael Schumacher, Rubens Barrichello, Jenson Button, Jarno Trulli, Kimi Raikkonen, Felipe Massa, Robert Kubica, Romain Grosjean, Sergio Perez, Charles Leclerc, Alex Albon, Max Verstappen, and Carlos Sainz. Well,
no one was going to get Jarno Trulli, were they?
Right, on to the race. Now, we've got a bit of team radio for you guys, all right? In this round, you're each going to hear a clip of team radio from previous Bahrain Grand Prix. A word or phrase has been bleeped out, and to win a point, you need to correctly guess what the missing word or phrase is. So, Damon, we'll start with you. What is Fernando Alonso saying here?
And by the way, this is my hero. Amazing performance. Well done, everyone.
Oh, Lance.
And by the way, Lance is my hero. Amazing performance. Well done, everyone.
Yeah. He is indeed. Lance is my hero.
See,
Damon,
I got it right.
You have your first point of the game. Right. Pedro, what is Gunther Steiner saying here?
Kevin, that was some comeback.
So, Pedro, what word did Gunther use to describe Kevin Magnussen's comeback as he finished P5 on his return to Formula One in 2022?
Amazing comeback.
Something comeback. How much am I going to help you?
I mean, the usual words from Gunther, maybe. No, I have no idea, man.
Kevin is a Dane.
Shocking.
No, I'm afraid, Pedro.
Danish comeback. Danish comeback.
Kevin, that was a Viking comeback.
Almost.
I don't know.
A Viking comeback. Right, Pinks, now you. What is Lance Stroll saying here?
How long is the red flag going to be?
Why is that, Lance?
Because I got a...
It must be, I've got a pick. Yeah.
Remember
how long
that?
Is the red flag? It's like gonna be because I got up. Well, it's either pee or poo.
Oh,
God!
How long is the red flag gonna be?
Why is that, Lance?
Because I gotta pee.
You're right, Pinks. Because I gotta pee is the correct
Me
answer.
Too.
So scores on the doors. Natalie, after the race has 3 points. Damon has one, and Pedro has yet to score. So, final round. It is the podium. And it is mystery F1 guest time. Your task is to reveal which mystery Formula One guest I am. I'll give you 3 clues in total, one at a time. If you guess correctly, after the first clue, you'll win 3 points. After the second clue, you'll receive 2 points. And after the final clue, a single point. Once you think you know the answer, shout it out. So, are you all ready for clue number one? If I wasn't a Formula One driver, I'd have liked to be a banker or a lawyer.
I think I know.
3 points. Any ideas?
Yeah. Nyck de Vries. Yeah, but he did go, he went and did business college, didn't he, after he stopped racing in F1.
Pedro Nats, any ideas?
I'm going to say George, just because he looks like a banker. He looks kind of like grown up and, you know, he's a total guest. I don't know.
No.
It was Checo, I think. It was Checo.
Yes, yes, Pedro. Yes. Yes.
I'm back. I'm back.
Oh, Pedro, those 3 points draw you level with Natalie. You now have three each.
Oh, it's a big one. It's a big one. It's a comeback. It's a Viking comeback.
So this tiebreaker is between Natalie and Pedro. Are you ready?
Yes.
How many pit stops were there in total at last year's Bahrain Grand Prix? Closest answer will win. All right. I just want one number from each of you, and then I will then say who's won. Pedro, okay. Number, please.
Okay. 38.
Okay. Natalie?
I'm going to go 39.
Damon, just bring you in. What would you have said?
I wouldn't have said anything like that. I reckon it's, well, there's 20 cars. They probably stopped twice, but some maybe didn't. So 35.
The correct answer is 48.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Natalie said 39. So Natalie wins. She is closest.
She's absolutely
our first winner of quiz the Nation. And Natalie, you have
smashed
it.
Well, Pedro, listen, I feel a bit of a fraud here because I waited for your answer and I thought I'd just go one more and then I'll be closer to it. So I was going to say 42, but I thought if I go 39, then anything above that is going to be mine for the taking, isn't it? So
yes, I think no, you did well. You were very astute.
Yeah,
he's
such a gentleman.
I need to get you to write down your answers. And
yeah, you should have done actually. That would have been fairer.
Well, Pinks, you're very modest. I think you smashed it. Right. Well, team, back to the season opener in Bahrain now. Both this race and the following one in Saudi Arabia take place on a Saturday. That's because Ramadan starts on Sunday, the 10th of March, and we go racing in Jeddah on Saturday, the 9th instead. And because Formula One rules stipulate that there must be at least a week between two races, Bahrain has also been brought forward by a day. Like the old days at Silverstone, when the British Grand Prix used to be on a Saturday as well. So here's the schedule at the Bahrain International Circuit this week. Free practice 1 and 2 take place on Thursday. FP3 and qualifying are on Friday. And it's a lights out for the race on Saturday at 6 p.m. local time. Please do check the official Formula One website or mobile app to find your local timings for each of those sessions. And Pedro, as the lap record holder in Bahrain, why don't you talk us through the track layout and which teams will be best suited to its characteristics?
Well, I think that the main challenge for this track is the braking stability into the first sector, especially just traction as well. And then the windy conditions of the middle sector, which is the one that has most number of corners. You have to have a quick car on the straights with high efficiency because they're very long straights, two long areas of DRS. So all in all, I think it would be a difficult track to get all the three sectors in, especially because of the windy conditions. I think the windy conditions will be the most difficult threat for all the drivers. It will be very difficult for them to beat my lap record, but I think this year will happen. You know, sooner or later it will happen, especially with the race simulations that we saw this race, this test. They were very fast, and especially if there's a safety car at the end of the race, which will give the opportunity to fit new set of tires for all of them. Also, the fact that that extra point for fastest lap is adding a big threat to my lap record this year. So, all in all, a difficult track. I'll be hanging in there, hopefully.
How many pit stops? Are we going to see more than 48?
I think it will be very similar to last year because the fact that it looks like a two-stop race like last year. And that's why I calculated 38 because it's 2 times 20 plus one car that doesn't stop, for example. I just said 38 because of that. That doesn't finish the race, I meant. So above 40, possibly. You know, the tyres are the same from last year, so we should be looking at the same between 40 to 48 pit stops total.
Well, look, final question from me is, can we get each of your podium predictions? Let's start with the 96 champion, Damon.
My podium for the Bahrain Grand Prix, the opening race of the 2024 season, is as follows, in reverse order. My first order is Fernando Alonso, right? And then the next is going to be Checo Perez. And then the winner is going to be a totally stunned world. Lewis is going to win it. And this is because both Red Bulls have sprung a leak and there's something, they've overheated or they got some technical problem they didn't realise was going to happen. And that's not wishful thinking. I just think we're going to get a surprise result. I hope, anyway.
Wow.
Lewis for the win. Pedro.
Okay, I'll go in reverse order as well as Damon. I'm not going to say any of my team members, any of Lance or Fernando. It wouldn't be fair. I have too much information, really. So I'm going to say a Ferrari. Carlos will be third. Checo second and first up in Max. So there's my guess. I think that's what we have learned this week.
I'm going to go Lando third. I'm going to go Charles second and Max first.
I think Natalie is really, really accurate on today. Eh? She's really someone to watch. She's beaten us to the questions and answers. And now it looks quite interesting, her prediction.
Well, I agree with you. We have 12 race preview shows this year, and I think Natalie's going to do you 12-0, lads.
The question really here is, does Natalie have inside information? Are you passing her the questions?
Well,
you
know,
this is something we should...
Paranoia.
Oh, yes. I remember the email that said, don't look at the answers. Do you remember that?
The email, exactly, yeah. Damon. Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. That would you seem like such a gentleman, and now you're suggesting that Natalie might be paranoia. Yeah, he's gone paranoid. He's gone F1 paranoid. But I don't know if I trust Natalie. She might have just got the competitive instinct. Might have just got the better of her there.
Another year of Formula One means another year of our F1 Nation Racing team desperately trying not to finish last in F1 Fantasy. Yes, F1 Fantasy is back for 2024, and so is the F1 Nation World Championship. It's free to play, just search for the Fantasy section on the official Formula One website or app to pick your team, and then you can join our league and compete against us and other listeners. With a cost cap of $100 million, you have to pick 5 drivers and 2 constructors. You can make transfers and apply various chips throughout the season to collect extra points at certain races. The game has definitely got more challenging this year, with drivers being more expensive, so it's hard to pick a solid lineup. But for the first 2 races, we're going with Max Verstappen, Fernando Alonso, Alex Albon, Zhou Guan Yu and Kevin Magnussen, with Red Bull Racing and Williams as our constructors. Remember, just search F1 Nation World Championship 2024 to join our league, and you have until the start of qualifying on Friday. Yes, Friday. It's a Saturday race in Bahrain to pick your team ahead of the opening race of the season. Good luck. We'll certainly need it. Not long to wait, everybody at home. If you have any questions, by the way, we've been talking about our quiz, any questions for any one of us, please remember to get in touch through f1nation@f1.com. But that's it. That is our season preview done and dusted. Thank you very much to Damon, to Nats and to Pedro for joining me. And you'll hear plenty of their expertise here on F1 Nation throughout the season. Thank you to you at home for listening as well. The show is nothing without you. And we will, of course, be back next Monday with our Bahrain Grand Prix review. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
Formula One is the greatest sport in the world.
But there can be a lot to understand. Don't worry, we're here to help.
I'm Katie Osborne. This is Christian Hugill.
And welcome to F1 Explains.
This is the official F1 podcast about how the sport really works. The drivers, the cars, the rules, the words, the risk takers, late breakers, and history makers that amaze and inspire us every race weekend.
Hit like, follow, or subscribe for new episodes every Friday as we answer your questions about F1 with the help of some very special guests. Oscar Piastri, welcome for your debut on F1 Explains.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Double world champion Mika Häkkinen, welcome to F1 Explains.
That they could make up. What are you doing, man? What are you doing?
By your side, a woman whose race strategy once made Sergio Perez cry.
I'm a speechless, guys.
It's important for me to say tears of joy. Welcome back, Bernie Collins.
Thank you so much. You've just not heard the crying ones from losing the race.
Susie Wolf joining us here on F1 Explains. What a joy to have you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining me, Christian Hugill and Katie Osborne on the stage is Formula One legend David Coulthard.
We'll be here across the 2024 season with current drivers and legends of the sport.
Plus, insights and explanations from people you don't usually get to hear from, the unseen experts who are essential to Formula One.
We need your question to put to our experts.
Are you F1 Explains?
We are!
I love your podcast!
Love F1 Explains! Christian Hugill!
Oh my God!
And Katie Osborne.
Katie Osborne!
Record it as a voice note on your phone, or you can write it in an email and send it to f1explains@f1.com.
Just search for F1 Explains wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll speak to you soon.